Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. Few North Carolinians pay closer attention to their state's politics and policy debates than Meredith College political science professor David McLennan. McLennan is a widely acknowledged expert on American government, campaigns and elections, political leadership, and in particular, women in politics. He joined me in studio earlier this week to discuss the latest special legislative session and some of the matters that are likely to dominate our politics in the run-up to the 2018 election. Well, Professor McLennan, welcome back to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
Always good to be with you, Rob.
As we record this, actually, the North Carolina General Assembly is preparing to hold its latest hastily called special session. We've got this dispute over the constitutional amendments that'll be on the November ballot.
Well, it's kind of minutia, but it's the descriptions, the written descriptions of the constitutional amendments that voters will see and perhaps make their decisions on. And it's really a change from a law they passed, which is to allow a group of three people who are political figures, including the Secretary of State and the Attorney General and the overseer of the General Assembly itself, to write the paragraphs. And apparently they aren't happy with the work that they think is coming out, so they want to take it back over, which is, you know, we're talking about relatively little language here for the Sixth Amendments, but I guess they feel like it's could sway the vote one way or the other.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there are critics, of course, who said that the way the at least some of the amendments are labeled right now could be, unless there is some good work to clarify things, could be a little misleading. For instance, there's one about creating a bipartisan board of elections, which basically already exists, and that same amendment takes a lot of power away from the governor that he or she would have to appoint figures and gives it to the General Assembly. And I think a critic could say that's not very clear right now, and it would have been good to make that a little clearer in the ballot language.
Well, I think there's a lot of criticism to be leveled here, including the fact that the language in the bills that ultimately became the constitutional amendments were vague. I mean, we don't know, for example, in voter ID, what the forms of voter ID would be acceptable, or state ID would be acceptable as a voter ID at the ballot box, and they'll come back presumably in another special session and kind of, if they pass, spell out some of these things. So there's a lot of uncertainty involved around these constitutional amendments.
Yeah, I mean, there's one that's gotten almost sort of joking attention is this constitutional right to hunt and fish. And some are saying, well, this is just a move to get the conservative base out because that's who's going to be really concerned about it. And I suppose there's something to that. But if you read it literally and they don't pass new legislation to clarify what the heck it means, I guess you could make a case that I got a right to hunt and fish anywhere. I could go hunt and fish in the local park or on the city street. It's very unclear as to what that actually means.
Yeah, you're right. The interpretations are there. I mean, I've sort of seen it as a way to protect rural lands from development. I mean, we, those of us in political science talk about the changing demographics of North Carolina and how the cities are getting bigger and the rural populations are decreasing. And with that comes the loss of power. And so they're sort of trying to cement power into the Constitution for things such as voter ID, but also so that cities can't expand out into the more rural communities and take over their land.
Is that what's behind all these constitutional amendments? Is it about locking things in?
Well, I think some of it is locking it in. Some of it is just the recognition that, you know, eventually Republicans are going to lose some seats. It may be this year, maybe 2020. You know, maybe they lose the supermajority status and can't do the things legislatively that they can do now with their numbers. And so, you know, the constitutional amendment is a way of sort of getting into policy what you can't do legislatively. You know, it's not like the Constitution is above reproach.
Sure.
We saw Amendment 1 in 2012 get shot down by the court. So it does make it more difficult for things that like voter ID to remain in place.
So let's talk about the supermajority. The Republicans have had this for a while now, and when we refer to that, that means that they've got such a large majority in both houses of the legislature that even if Governor Cooper vetoes a bill, they can simply override it without any help from Democrats. It looks as if, at least perhaps in the House, there's a reasonable chance that Democrats will end that. If that were to happen, do you think that would make for a significant change in state politics?
Maybe well, it not. Does make it so that the Republicans would need Democrats. I mean, right now it's at the situation where they pretty much pursue an agenda. I mean, we saw the budget battle this year in the short session as a prime example of where they didn't even accept amendments from the Democrats. And so, you know, it does make it more based on cooperation. We also know that even if it gets a seat or two under the supermajority status, that does not mean that Democrats will have all this power, because we know Democrats sometimes vote in the Republican side and vice versa. So, but it certainly takes away that sort of automatic system that we've seen where, I mean, just look at the number of veto overrides the Republicans have done this year.
Obviously, at the national level right now, Donald Trump is changing the rules in modern American politics in many ways. Do you see any kind of a connection between the sort of our way or the highway approach that the Republicans have been taking here in North Carolina and the rise of Trump? There seems to be a stridency, just a more vigorous nature to the way they're pursuing their agenda, that I wonder if there's a connection between the rise of Trump, or is it just the fact that they've got the votes and they can get away with it?
Well, I think this is something, you know, again, in North Carolina, Democrats controlled politics for so long. You can sort of see it as Republicans now have their shot and are able to push an agenda. But, you know, there is a lot of evidence to show that the agenda that the Republicans have been pushing since they've had power, well, all the way back to 2010, but certainly after 2013, has had more of a national focus. We know groups like ALEC have been pushing legislation we've seen passed in about 30 states. But I think what this really reflects, Rob, is just the hyper-partisanship we've got going on at the state and national levels.
One sort of interesting connection between the hyper-partisanship, we've talked a lot about gerrymandering and the fact that our maps have been drawn in such a way that it makes it almost impossible for moderates to win elections anymore. We now have a new nominee for the Supreme Court at the national level, Brett Kavanaugh, who's President Trump's pick. If he were to go on the court, there had been some real hope that North Carolina and maybe some other states' challenges to gerrymandering laws were actually going to succeed at the Supreme Court, and that the Supreme Court would rule that partisan gerrymandering of the kind we see here in North Carolina, Wisconsin, Maryland, is unconstitutional. It violates the voting rights of those people who have no chance of electing people that they support. Now it would appear perhaps with Kavanaugh on the court that that may be in jeopardy, that he may provide the fifth vote to sustain the current state of affairs. Is that sort of the direction you see things heading?
Well, Anthony Kennedy, the outgoing justice, certainly was at least more open-minded on gerrymandering. It didn't seem to help this past spring when they came out with their rulings on a number of cases. They just took a pass on that. But Brett Kavanaugh, at least in his statements and writings, does show an inclination to be more inclined to allow gerrymandering. So, you know, that does not bode well for states like North Carolina looking for some federal relief for this. We've seen some other states, California being one, who've tried to pursue it at a state level, trying to change those. That may be what North Carolina is left with.
Yeah, there's some notion, I guess, that if the Republicans, for instance, saw themselves losing in the 2020 election and realized that their actual majorities might be at risk, that there might be a sweet spot of time there where they would support redistricting reform, and that the Democrats might still go along with it as well. But it seems like a bit of a long shot.
Well, we've been living under this kind of myth for about 30 years, right, that when Democrats were in control, Republicans wanted independent redistricting and vice versa.
There are other, of course, implications for North Carolina if we have a more conservative Supreme Court. Anthony Kennedy has been the fifth vote to sustain abortion rights, LGBT equality. Do you think that the Supreme Court would actually go that direction? Is there a real risk that we could see a retrenchment on those sort of basic rights of abortion rights, LGBT equality?
There's always a risk. I mean, the court has broad powers. I mean, you know, overturn cases and that sort of thing. My suspicion, though, is what we'll see is a gradual chipping away. For example, abortion rights, we've seen, you know, states around the country pass some pretty restrictive laws. Iowa, for example, you know, those are going to be the test cases to see if they allow, you know, less than 20 weeks prohibitions.
Specific requirements with respect to the facilities that provide the abortions. So we have to have a gold-plated hallway when we provide the abortion services. That might be okay. We won't necessarily say we're overturning Roe versus Wade, but it might make it almost impossible for there actually to be an abortion facility.
But certainly the president, when it came down to his final choices, he did not choose anybody that looked like Anthony Kennedy in terms of judicial philosophy.
Only other issue I wanted to ask you about is any progress on the rise of women in North Carolina politics? We've got candidates in essentially every race this year for 170 seats in the General Assembly, which is good news and relatively unprecedented, at least in recent times. How are women doing in all of this? I know that's an issue that you follow.
It's one I follow pretty closely. They're doing better. Just in terms of the General Assembly, You know, we're seeing about a 4 to 5% rise in the number of candidates that are running, which, you know, is nowhere close to gender parity, but it's an improvement at the county level. We're seeing some increases. You know, I think what we're seeing is that North Carolina is lagging a little bit behind even some of our neighboring states like Virginia. We saw a big increase in 2017 in their legislative races. But there's much more activity on the ground. Women's groups are now more recruiting better, having more influence over the system. So what we may not see in 2018 at the midterms is a huge bump. We've got the infrastructure in place for 2020 and beyond that to see more women prepared to run.
Let's end it there on that very good news. Let's hope that continues to grow. Right. We hope you will look forward to your further chronicling of that and just keeping your fingers on North Carolina politics, keeping us informed. We really appreciate all you do for that.
Thanks, Rob. It's always great to be with you.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.